But I'm very pleased to welcome back to our program right now Lisa Graves. She's executive director of the group Center for Media and Democracy and its editor-in-chief. She was the chief counsel for nominations for the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee and served as deputy assistant attorney general in the U.S. Department of Justice. Lisa, thanks for making time for our program tonight.
Oh, thank you for inviting me on.
So before we get started on our topic, which is the Fix the Debt campaign and who's behind that, just tell our listeners briefly about your group, the Center for Media and Democracy.
Sure. We are a national watchdog and investigative group. We happen to be located in Madison, Wisconsin, but we cover national issues, and we primarily focus on corporate spin. That's corporate PR campaigns, corporate influence on our government, on the media, and we recently won a number of awards for our ongoing investigation called ALEC Exposed, which is A-L-E-C-E-X-P-O-S-E-D, alecexposed.org, about the American Legislative Exchange Council, which we discovered was providing a mechanism for a corporate lobbyist to vote as equals with state lawmakers on bills before those bills were introduced in the state houses across the country, bills to change our rights in numerous ways, and those bills were cleansed of any reference to the fact that they were pre-voted on, literally pre-voted on by corporations voting as equals with some of our state politicians across the country.
And, of course, that really laid a lot of foundation for some pretty powerful media entities getting out there and talking about what was going on, not only in terms of the Stand Your Ground gun laws, which involved the Trayvon Martin case and his murder in Florida, but also the suppression of votes across the country and the attempt to present a lot more obstacles to voters as they went to cast ballots in this last presidential election, and many other issues that grew out of the whole ALEC investigation that your group spearheaded. So congratulations on that. And we invited you to be here tonight to talk about another important investigation that you've been working on, and that is the investigation regarding the Fix the Debt campaign and the billionaire who's funding it, as well as the conflicts of interest inherent in this effort and the ultimate goals of slashing the social safety net. So maybe I can ask you, Lisa, just to sort of provide some of the facts here about what the Fix the Debt campaign is, who's funding it, and their objectives.
Well, sure. So we are pleased to announce this investigation with The Nation magazine, which is on the stands this week. We have launched, my organization has launched a new website that's petersonpyramid.org about Pete Peterson, a Wall Street billionaire, the former, the guy who co-founded Blackstone, who has been spending a lot of money trying to persuade people that the debt is the issue in essence and not the economy. And so what we discovered was there was a huge PR campaign underway called Fix the Debt that operates out of one of the committees that he's funded, that Pete Peterson has funded, and it is called Fix the Debt, and what it does is try to present this issue of the debt as a bipartisan issue in which they're the only supposed adults in the room talking about solutions. Meanwhile, we know from the work of Fix the Debt, as well as the Simpson-Bowles operation, the commission, and their efforts, ongoing efforts to influence policymakers, that a real big part of this effort by Pete Peterson is to get his hands, to get the hands of the private sector, in essence, on Social Security and to change Social Security in significant ways to make it harder to access for Americans, to reduce the amount of payments for ordinary Americans, and also basically undermine other safety net programs. And so what we've discovered is that Fix the Debt is really riddled with conflicts of interest from the top all the way through the organization in terms of people who are the leaders of Fix the Debt who are corporate lobbyists or are on big corporate boards and whose interest really is not the same as ordinary people's interests. So Erskine Bowles, who's a Democrat, worked in the Clinton administration, cashed out from his public service, has been very involved in the private sector. In fact, he makes nearly $350,000 a year for a couple of hours a year working on Morgan Stanley's board. And he makes over $600,000 a year on Facebook's board. These are board positions. They're only a couple hours. He has a fiduciary duty toward those corporations. You know, that's $1 million a year for a couple hours of work. That's great work if you can get it, I suppose. But he's not exactly the kind of guy I would trust to put my interests first, especially when one of the things he's after is changing Social Security and the related part of this, fix the debt and the other parts of the campaign are this notion that Social Security is broke or insolvent. It's not. Every legitimate study of Social Security shows that it's solvent for at least 20 years.
Thanks for that, Lisa. And it goes without saying, we live in a time where the politics of the country is really centered on the debate about austerity and cutting back government. And a big part of the 2012 election campaign was about that exact that topic. And Pete Peterson and his group is really trying to work, I guess, hand in glove with the Republicans who've set up all these mini crises, the debt ceiling, the sequester, and funding the government, a lot of looming deadlines. And there's a push on almost every one of these deadlines to cut back Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. How successful has Pete Peterson been in driving this agenda?
Well, it's interesting because in some ways he's been very unsuccessful, because when ordinary Americans on one of the bus tours that was related to one of the operations he did a couple years ago, on one of those bus tours, when they heard the information, Americans said, no, we want more Social Security. We want these programs that keep our grandparents that we've paid into. We want them strong. We don't want them weakened. And so in some ways he's been not successful in this very long-standing ideological hostility to Social Security that Pete Peterson has evinced. But in other ways, he's been very successful, because right now in Washington, all you hear about is the debt talk. Almost the only thing occupying the conversation is sequestration, which is a process by which the so-called entitlement programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are sequestered away from these cuts that are coming to the discretionary spending. Now, the reason why those programs are not part of these cuts is because they're not discretionary spending. They're mandatory spending, because you and I and anyone who gets a paycheck has paid into those programs, and it's our Social Security and our Medicaid and Medicare, and that's why those entitlements are off the table. Meanwhile, the Fix the Debt crew and some of the others, they want Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid to be part of the negotiations. So when they say they want a balanced approach, what they're saying is they want your health insurance, your retirement to be part of these massive cuts. And so, you know, I think it's an enormously problematic issue, because the Fix the Debt guys have had access to the White House, access to both branches of Congress extensively. And at the same time, as you point out, we've had a series of, in some ways, manufactured crises. Phil Bredesen, the former governor of Tennessee, admitted as much. He said that they need to create an artificial crisis to get what they want. What they want is to focus more on cutting these social programs than real solutions, in my opinion. So, for example, a lot of the firms that are part of Fix the Debt have negative tax rates. They don't pay taxes in the way you or I do. They have a negative tax rate. They're not paying 35% or 20% or 10%. It's a negative tax rate. And many of these firms that are part of Fix the Debt have also been pushing for what they're calling a territorial tax system, which basically allows them to offshore more profits to avoid paying into the United States government and America's priorities. And so it's a very deceptive campaign.
Now, Lisa, I'll just briefly reintroduce you here. Lisa Graves is our guest tonight on Counterpoint. She's executive director of the group Center for Media and Democracy, and we're talking about the group's investigation in collaboration with The Nation magazine into the group Fix the Debt, a campaign to preach and advocate for austerity and slashing of the social safety net programs, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Lisa, your group and others recently had a press conference where you were bringing to the attention of the country the fact that Pete Peterson and his Fix the Debt campaign was launching a grassroots, or what you might call an AstroTurf, state-by-state campaign in actually 23 states around the country. Tell us what the Fix the Debt campaign is planning.
Well, what they've done is they have announced with a press release, basically, that there are 23 state chapters. They call them chapters. They're basically former politicians who've walked through the revolving door and landed plum jobs at law firms or as lobbyists, joining with corporations, corporate lobbyists, and companies that are part of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, claiming that this is a bipartisan movement, that this is a grassroots effort in the states. It's really little more than a press release by some of the biggest corporations in the world, the biggest corporations in the United States. And it's dressed up to look like it involves statesmen. Most of these so-called statesmen are people who we've elected to public office in the past, who've left public office in order to cash their tickets and make big money bidding and pushing these corporate interests. They have a couple of sitting political officials that are on board as well, and Fix the Debt is running these big promotions, in essence, on their site, saying that they have over 300,000 people who've signed their very vague petition, but it turns out they bought about 250,000 of those names from a list service that charges $1 or $2 a name for names off of petitions. And so there's an effort to basically push this idea that there's this grassroots movement that Americans are clamoring for the debt to be the top priority rather than creating jobs, when in fact Americans routinely talk about when they're polled how getting our economy started, making our economy stronger is actually what their top priorities are. And debt is way, way, way down the list. In fact, some Americans know, and many Americans don't know, that our debt is actually going down, that after President Obama won and was able to push back on the Bush tax cuts, which the Republicans wanted to make permanent forever, the deficit has started to, the budget deficit has started to go down, whereas most people think with all this debt hysteria that it's actually going up. It's not.
Lisa, what is it that groups like yours and others can do to counter the FAIR campaign that Pete Peterson and his organization is trying to spread around the country, that without dramatic cuts in government programs, that the United States and our children are going to face a horrendous economic situation, another depression, or whatever else they're talking about? What can be done to counter this information?
Well, one of the things we're doing is trying to get this information shared through our site, petersonpyramid.org, or you can find it on our Source Watch site or our PR Watch site or through the nation, because more Americans need to know when they see people like Erskine Bowles on TV talking about debt, you know, that he's really cashing in big time working for some of the biggest banks and the biggest tax avoiders in the country. They need to know that some of these companies pay less in taxes, in essence, than you or I, that they're negative, that they've got a negative tax rate, that they're pushing for policies to keep corporate tax loopholes open while trying to make it harder for the rest of us to escape poverty as we age, or to escape poverty due to, you know, a catastrophic medical situation by not having adequately funded Medicare or Medicaid. And so we really need people's help pushing back. We also need the help of young people, because one of the things that they've been touting is this campaign called The Can Kicks Back, which purports to be a grassroots movement of college students. In fact, it's located out of the same offices as the Fix the Debt operation, and they actually want people to believe that college students are more concerned about debt than they are about their own student loans and getting jobs. But most Americans, and I'm sure most of your listeners know from history, that America tried an austerity agenda in the last depression. It was called Hoover's Plan, and it resulted in Hoovervilles, these towns, tent cities of massive poverty, because you can't cut your way out of a depression. You can't cut your way out of a recession. You need to stimulate the economy, and that involves not cutting the debt in these draconian ways. In fact, economist Dean Baker says that this sort of effort by Fix the Debt, Alan Simpson, and the Erskine Bowles is like complaining when a house is on fire that you're spending too much water trying to put the fire out.
Well said. That is very true. And one of the concerns that's been out there for some time is President Obama's seeming embrace of some of these suggested cuts to Social Security and Medicare. Namely, in negotiations with the Republicans in 2011, he really talked about moving to some kind of grand bargain by raising the Medicare eligibility age. And more recently, he's talked about using something called the chained CPI, the Consumer Price Index, to reduce the benefits of Social Security recipients over time to not keep up with inflation, as has been the sort of template that we've been using for many, many years. But Lisa, what can you tell us about the effect of this campaign for austerity and cutbacks on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid on President Obama now in his second term?
Well, I have to say I'm worried, quite frankly, that President Obama will be, in essence, the wimp that gives it all away, because this talk of a grand bargain is really nothing more than a grand swindle. This effort to try to do these so-called balance cuts, almost in the same way that you hear the kicker for Fox News as fair and balanced, is not balanced at all, because serious and legitimate cuts to the Pentagon's budget, which is more than the next 20 countries combined, are not part of those packages. And quite frankly, this effort to embrace or even indicate some embrace of what you mentioned in terms of chain CPI is immoral. What that effort would do, and it's an effort that's been peddled by Republicans and that Obama basically put his toe in the water and indicated that he might embrace as part of a bargain, that what that does is precisely as you say, it makes it so that the older you get on Social Security, the less money you get in terms of keeping up with the cost of living. So at a time when perhaps as you age, you need more prescriptions, you might need more medical devices or assistance in your living, your cost of living might go up with the need for assisted living, you're getting less in Social Security after paying it into it your whole life. It's a terrible idea, and quite frankly, what it does is obscure some of the real issues on Social Security, because as most Americans don't know, because they don't make more than $110,000 a year, every dollar in income over $110,000 a year is not taxed for Social Security purposes. And so a huge number of Americans, every member of Congress, all the federal judges, many federal employees, about halfway through the year, they stop paying into Social Security because everything they make over $110,000 doesn't go into Social Security. You could secure Social Security's solvency beyond the next 20 years, and quite frankly, it is solvent for the next 20 years without a doubt based on, you know, current trends. You could secure its solvency for the next several decades just by ending the loophole for people who make more than $110,000 a year. And you could make it solvent for decades more if you would ensure that people who basically, like Mitt Romney during college, make almost all their income entirely on the stock market, pay something into Social Security versus earn that income Social Security free for the most part. And so there are some really easy solutions to ensure Social Security's long-term solvency. Chain CPI is one of the worst ideas ever.
Right. Well, I know even reading in the paper today, I was looking at an article that talked about how, you know, all the grave predictions of huge Medicare expenditures in the coming years, all those estimates of these giant deficits, you know, with Medicare, related to Medicare, have come down quite a bit because of the recovery of the economy, but also because of some of the reforms made with the Health Care Reform Act that President Obama had upheld in the Supreme Court recently. So, you know, dire predictions aside, there's a lot of contradictory evidence out there.
Well, that's right. And in fact, you know, one of the biggest drivers of health care costs is Congress's effort to block the Medicare and Medicaid parts of the U.S. government agencies from negotiating for better prices for prescription drugs. They've taken that off the table because these prescription drug companies have so much influence in Congress that they don't let those agencies negotiate the way the Department of Veterans Affairs is able to negotiate. They don't let them negotiate the way Canada can negotiate for drug prices. Americans pay more for their drugs in general than almost any population in the world. And that's helping to drive our healthcare costs as well as our aging population. But the solution isn't to make people pay more and more as they get older and have less income. The solution is to make the system better in order to make it more affordable for more Americans, not push more into the private sector quest for profits basically at any cost, which is what we're seeing in the prescription drug arena. And so there are some benefits, as you point out, from the ACA, from the healthcare reform. Unfortunately, those benefits don't go far enough in curing that cost issue within the medical system in this country.
Another topic to talk about with single payer and the public option, things that have not blossomed as they have around the world and done a lot to reduce costs per person in Europe and Canada and other places. But Lisa, we're out of time. Leave our listeners, if you would, with the web address for the Center for Media and Democracy, and especially how they can find more information about the Fix the Debt campaign investigation you've conducted.
Sure. You can find out more about the Center for Media and Democracy on our main website, which is called prwatch.org. We're also on Facebook if you search for Center for Media and Democracy. And you can find out more about these charts and graphs and cool images that talk about this conflict of interest by these fix the debt pushers. You can find that out at petersonpyramid.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at prwatch or sourcewatch or the Lisa Graves, that's my Twitter handle.
All right. Well, Lisa, thanks for all your important work, Alec, and this and everything else that you've been working on. That we'll look to stay in touch with you to see where this all goes, and hopefully made our listeners aware of some of these important facts about this so-called grassroots campaign. Thank you so much. Buying names, that was great. That's what democracy is all about, right? Buying names on your petitions.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lisa. Good night.
Thanks. Bye.
That's Lisa Graves, Executive Director of the group Center for Media and Democracy.